fall is a vibe. So, what's yours? Do you go wild? Or get a little nostalgic? Do you like to cozy up indoors? Or kick it outdoors? Whatever you fall for, get shoes that get you. We've got the trend. You bring the vibes. DSW, let us surprise you.
A beautifully designed Squarespace website is the difference between thinking about photography school and selling your portraits online. It's the difference between giving away those cookies you just made for free and running your cookie empire. A beautifully designed Squarespace website is the difference between having a movie reviewing hobby and a movie reviewing career. Squarespace, because no matter what you're into, a website makes it real. Use offer code THEDIFFERENCE for 30% off select plans. Terms and conditions apply.
You know, recommendations can be great. Maybe someone recommended this podcast, and here you are. But home projects are different. If a podcast isn't your thing, you lose a few minutes. If you hire your cousin's neighbor to mount your TV, you might end up with a lopsided screen and wall damage. Maybe I know a guy just isn't enough for your home. That's why Thumbtack works. It matches you with top-rated local pros with photos, reviews, and credentials all in one place. For your next home project, try Thumbtack. Hire the right pro today.
It's the Sal Sports and Stuff podcast, episode number 23, a very special podcast with a very special guest. Somebody I've admired for a long time, somebody I've listened to for a long time, somebody I still listen to, and somebody I've wanted to talk to for a long time. Finally was able to make it happen, and it is Robbie Takac of the Goo Goo Dolls. If you grew up in Buffalo, you know all about the Goo Goo Dolls, and if you like music at all, you know who the Goo Goo Dolls are. Robbie is the bassist and a vocalist for the Goo Goo Dolls. They've had a tremendous life and career. In this interview, we're going to talk about that life and career growing up in Buffalo, what it was like playing at some of the venues they played at, talk about the anthology of the Goo Goo Dolls from their beginnings to where they are today, some of the things he has going on right now, some of the cool stuff from the past, including that epic July 4th, 2004 concert in the pouring rain in downtown Buffalo and Niagara Square. We get into that, as well as a lot more. Before I get to the interview with Robbie, I want to say thank you very much to Sam Rudnick of EntercomBuffaloRadio.com, promotions manager. She did an amazing job to help set this up with Steve from the management of the Goo Goo Dolls. Without them, I wouldn't have been able to talk to Robbie. And here is Robbie Takac of the Goo Goo Dolls on the Sal Sports and Stuff podcast. First, Robbie, thank you very much for doing this. I have been a big fan of the band for a long time, growing up myself here in Western New York. We're a little bit about the same age. I'm just a few years younger than you, but this is something I really been wanting to do for a long time, so I'm glad we were able to do it today. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And I'm glad to hear you talk about a little bit more than sports, because quite honestly, it'll be a pretty short conversation with the breadth of my knowledge of sports. So it's good to hear. It's great to be here.
Sure. I grew up a drummer myself, but I was such a sports guy. I was so heavily into sports that I really never was able to play in a band per se. I didn't have time to do things like that. So, you know, you do what I have always wanted to do, which is be on stage. I'm on entertainment in a different form. You're on the stage in front of a lot of people. So, you know, you've been able to experience that, you know, your whole life. You've had quite a journey, and obviously people who are from Buffalo should know who you are as a guitarist for the Goo Goo Dolls. But I want to talk about that growing up and in Buffalo and what it means to you. So let's go all the way back to, you know, just growing up in West Seneca and what life was like for you.
I don't know, probably pretty normal. You know, I was born in South Buffalo, so I still held a lot of roots in that area. You know, my family moved out to West Seneca and started playing in bands and stuff out there. You know, realized after a little while that after strapping the couch cushions to my legs and being handed a baseball glove and a hockey stick for many, many years, I realized that position and goalie just meant that I couldn't really play hockey or really any sports very well. So I ended up playing in a lot of bands. You realize pretty early that, you know, you got to meet girls and do all that other kind of stuff in some way. And I wasn't doing it in academia or sports. So I headed towards music, and, you know, my idols became, you know, Mick Jagger and, you know, Keith Richards and, you know, and the like. And it sort of led me down that road, you know, and And here I sit.
Yeah, it might have been the Milek street hockey pads, though, that did it. Nobody really did well in those, Robbie. Okay, so
dude,
it's okay.
I'm telling you, man, it was, you know, it's like, car, you know, everybody's running out of the way, you know, and I'm trying to pull a net out of the way with couch cushion stress strapped to my legs. Anyway.
Yeah, I totally get it. Now, those idols you mentioned, you know, mainly vocalists there, but, you know, what bands really started influencing you? What sounds were really a part of you really attaching on to music and loving it?
Yeah, I had older relatives, you know, uncles and cousins who turned me on to a lot of great music, you know, stuff like, you know, Roberta Flack and America and, you know, the Rolling Stones, of course. And a little bit later, you know, I discovered, you know, you know, what every 16-year-old of my age discovered, you know, bands like Kiss, you know, and stuff like that. And yeah, and that really ignited a whole different part of my mind, you know, something that was a little bit different than everything else that I was, you know, being all the great music, you know, that I would had been being turned on to, you know, as a young person. But that definitely set me apart from them. You know, they didn't get that. And, you know, I think that sort of opened the doors to a lot of other things because I got used to liking music that people didn't really get. And, you know, the more people I met, you know, the more places I went in town, you know, the more I ventured out of the South towns and, you know, came downtown and met more and more people, you know, the more and more music I discovered and, you know, eventually got into radio and doing that kind of stuff. And, you know, the whole atmosphere just exploded for me. It was great.
Do you remember the first, like, concert you went to, like, big concert at the Odd or anywhere else?
Yeah, so I was in Lake and Palmer. That was awesome. At the Odd, I saw a guy named Jean-Luc Ponté. Saw Todd Rundgren really early on. Yeah, the Kinks. Yeah, I saw a lot of bands early on. You know, we used to go to a lot of concerts. Concerts weren't, you know, they weren't that expensive, really, you know. So, you know, we would go to a lot of shows, you know, especially at the Odd. I actually got to play a show at the Odd, which was pretty great, before it got torn down.
That's amazing.
That was fun.
And then I know, before all that, though, I know you guys went around and played some smaller venues in Buffalo. I do want to ask you, though, when you say, you know, you got into radio a little bit, I read about that. You wanted to get into radio, and you actually worked at a local radio station, from what I read online. Like, what was the extent of that, and where was that?
I actually worked at a bunch of radio stations in Buffalo over the years. I worked at Woo Woo FM 107.7. I worked at the same frequency when it was the Lake. I did a local show there. I was on the Fox. I was on the I voiced the Edge for a while. I did did a lot of commercials. Voiced some stuff for the Buffalo Philharmonic. Yeah, you know, I sort of keep in it bit, you know, but you know, I mean, you know, I always felt like it was something that I was going to have to fall back on by now.
right.
You know, so, but, you know, I mean, you never know, you know, life, you know, leads you in funny ways for sure.
What were the first bands that you became a part of and how did they, you know, come together?
When I was a kid, I was in like a lot of cover bands and stuff growing up, you know, through, you know, junior high school, that kind of stuff.
Were you guys popular? Did you play at like school venues? Did you just like do backyard parties and people came by or just garage stuff?
Yeah, it was stuff like that, you know, backyard parties. I used to play at McFan's, you know, with cover bands. I used to play a lot of, you know, all the local venues here in town that, you know, everybody did, you know, Cougars and the Purple Moose, you know, I don't know, I could go on and on, you know, just like all these old venues, you know, and just playing cover songs, learning how to be in a band, learning how to play my guitar, you know, learning how to go hang posters up, you know, that kind of stuff, you know, the, you know, all that stuff that, you know, rock and roll university, you know, you know, all that stuff that you got to learn, you know, and then it comes time where you meet some people and I, you know, happen to meet John and, you know, and George at the time. And, you know, we started writing our own songs and that was really my first foray into that kind of thing. And, you know, man, it was 30 some years ago now.
So. Yeah, I read first name of band was the Monarchs, I believe, or that you were in.
Well, that was one of my cover bands when I was a kid. Yeah, we used to, like I said, play like McVans and you know all those kind of like little hole in the wall places in Buffalo.
And I, my brother is a little bit older than me. He would see you guys. It was a little before I was able to go to these places, but Blind Melons, I know, is a place which used to be Sinbad, I believe.
Yeah, absolutely. Goo Goo Dolls played Blind Melons. I don't think Goo Goo Dolls ever played Sinbad's. I played Sinbad's with a couple of bands when I was a kid, but same building, same stage, and us. But we ended up. That ended up being the last place that we did with our the last show we did with our first drummer was actually at Blind Melons on New Year's.
Tell me the first time you met Johnny. What did you think of him?
He was a trip, man. He was playing in a band with my cousin called the Beaumonts, and I came in to play rhythm guitar for the Beaumonts. I never had a rhythm guitar player, and. Yeah, and I don't think he knew, actually, that there was a rhythm guitar player coming. And he showed up a little late, and he showed up, and there was another guy playing guitar, which I'm sure kind of freaked him out a little bit. We kind of got it on. He and I got on really well, and we started spending more and more time together. And that band started kind of falling apart a little bit, and we had ideas of our own. And, before you knew it, we were in the studio. I was intern at a recording studio in Buffalo. So before you know it, we're in the studio recording some stuff, and some people in New York heard our songs and decided they liked them a lot. And a local guy here named Artie Kwitchoff, who was our first manager, kind of made the whole thing happen. And and we ended up releasing a record, which I think has probably sold 6,000-7,000 copies of at this point, still after all these years, just a little punk rock record basically. And, and that kind of started this whole journey.
And then the name Goo Goo Dolls, how did you guys settle on that? Because I'm sure like all artists trying to really make an impact, you want to have something that's people are able to remember at the same time, maybe something personal. Where did this come from?
I think we sort of thought it was funny. Certainly didn't think I'd be 55 and explaining it still, but it's inevitable when you get a name like that, I don't know. It was a toy that we saw, and at the time we were pretty brash, and it was about the antithesis of what our name should be. So of course that was the one shows, and, had a lot of O's in it. I don't know.
No, I totally get it. I tell you, Robbie Takeac of the Goo Goo Dolls joining me here on the Sal Sports and Stuff podcast. What did you guys, talk about as far as your sound? I mean, right now you're in the middle of the, alternative rock stage, it's becoming really big in the country. Did you have that definitive sound already? Did you decide that this was the way that you were going to make it if you're going to do it this way?
No. I mean, when we started, our idols were selling 7,000 records, we weren't looking, I don't even think we were thinking about a career, quite honestly. That was probably the last thing on our mind. So I think we were just hanging out, having fun, doing our thing, being, just being young, man, enjoying our lives, I guess that's really the only way I can explain it, being in our 20s and being invincible and just being out there,
Did you have side jobs? Did you work at places part time?
Yeah, we did all sorts of things, man. Johnny roasted peanuts. I was a sound man. I was a sound man at that M&T Bank series downtown. I did that for a really long time.
Okay.
I DJ'd at the Pink Flamingo. John was a bar back at the Continental for years and years. Man, we always had jobs, working in factories or warehouses, doing whatever we needed to do to pay the rent.
What was the time when you guys finally said, what happened, what triggered it that you said, this is maybe going somewhere and we need to start taking this really seriously and maybe this could be something for us?
You're too busy at that point. Like if it's going to happen, if it's really going to happen and if it's happening, like you're too busy. you're working so hard and things just sort of shift and you don't notice it because you're busy and you're working. And you know, it's just like the struggle becomes a little less, I guess. You know what I mean? I mean, you know, more people start showing up to the shows and stuff, but it's just like you're so busy. I don't think there's ever a moment where you often think to yourself, wow, holy cow, look at this. You know, like I'm successful today. You know?
Right. Yeah. Was there people that came aboard that said, like, I can help create this vehicle for you? Did you have to start accepting more of those people into your inner circle, maybe, who kind of could create some avenues for you? Did these things just happen? Like you said, just, hey, one day you show up and there's 2,000 and there's 4,000, then you're being asked to play at the odd one day.
No, I mean, we've been lucky enough to have great people in our lives since we were kids, you know. Just friends, you know, people who, you know, took us aside and said, hey, watch out for this, or, you know, I've been through this or that. You know, John Lombardo from 10,000 Maniacs was real instrumental really early on in our career. A guy named Armand Petrie, a guy named Mike Sack, who's a local engineer. Kim Frillo, Alan Baumgartner from the old Trackmaster Studios, where actually my studio, GCR Audio, is now in that same space, and they're down the street a bit now. But yeah, I mean, you know, just a crew of people here, you know, some people real early on, you know, who believed in the band, you know, enough to lend us a couple thousand bucks. I don't think without those couple thousand dollar loans really early on, we probably wouldn't be here talking to you today, because, you know, we wouldn't have been able to pay our rent and still do this, you know. So right. We ended up, you know, so we would have missed a tour, and, you know, perhaps someone wouldn't have seen us, and, you know, we wouldn't have had the opportunities we have. So, you know, those people early on, you know, that, you know, lent us what seemed like small amounts of money to us now, you know, I mean, you know, it was a monumental change in our lives, you know. So, you know, like this girl, Chrissy Clifford, lent us some cash, and Andy Parker, like, just these guys, just these names I'm seemingly pulling out of nowhere right now.
But, no, it's amazing. You think you back, know, of all the people that help you when you.
Yeah, you know, like, I mean, that. It's amazing, you know, and you know, it goes on, you know, straight through till today. You know, a guy named Tom Calderon, I'm sorry, I was spacing out there for a minute, who was program director at WBNY, you know, ended up working out at MTV and VH1 and Spotify, and he championed us for years, you know, and you know, just so many people, you know, in the upper realm of things, you know, later on, you know, but just in Buffalo here, you know, it's pretty amazing, yep. You know, just the amount of people who believed in what we were doing at the time and you know, helped us out.
Let's talk about the anthology a little bit. I know you had a few singles along the way that kind of gained some attention, but, you know, generally it's considered, and you tell me if you think this is right, it's generally considered Superstar Car Wash really kind of put you guys a little bit more on, you know, the map nationally, if you will, and really maybe globally, people understanding who you were. Would you agree with that, or was that kind of maybe a really big breaking point for you?
Yeah, Superstar Car Wash. We had a song on that record that we had worked on with Paul Westerberg from one of the bands that we loved called The Replacements. And so he was, you know, he was garnering a lot of attention at the time. So so people kind of heard the record and you know, it was one of the first records that we kind of went out our safety bubble of Buffalo here. Mm-hmm. And worked on. We worked, a guy named Gavin McKillop produced it, who had worked with, like, bands, like, at the time, like The Church and General Public and Toad the Wet Sprocket and, you know, some of the bands of that era. And so he came in and we did half the record here and half of it out in Los Angeles, out in Burbank. Yeah, so that was a cool record for us, you know, that really sort of started to cement a sound for us. You know, John was singing a lot more at that point, you know, and I think the band was feeling it, you know, getting its footing a little bit better.
And then A Boy Named Goo, 1995 comes out. Obviously, lots of successful tracks on that. Dizzy Up the Girl becomes, I think by then, you guys are super mainstream at the time, both in the sound and in popularity. What was life like for you, and how crazy were things when these things just started seeming like they were rolling for you guys?
Well, once again, busy, you know, yeah. I mean, for a multitude of reasons, you know, you know, I could give you like our average day then, you know, like we would pull into a parking lot at 6 o'clock in the morning from driving all night from a city before. And there'd be a dude sitting in a car waiting for us. And we would jump in that car and we would drive to 4-5 radio stations in the morning. This is like first thing, like we roll out of the bus and then we go and do sound check and take a shower and meet a bunch of people and do a rock show. And pretty much we did that every single day for like a couple of years there. It was crazy. It was the most busy I've ever been in my life. And, so, I mean, it was exciting, you know, that it was all coming down, but sometimes when you're that busy, it's really hard to see the forest through the trees, man. Like, you know, you're just thinking to yourself, oh my God, how am I going to get to tomorrow even, you know, like with all this, and you're looking at an itinerary and it's like, you've got 5 straight more months of it, you know, and you're like, oh my God, how do I do this? We don't work like that anymore. It's like different for us now, you know, we've put things together differently, you know, but then it was just like, give us anything, you know, let's go, let's do this, you know. And I think that's part of the Buffalo thing, you know, like, I don't know, we weren't afraid to work, you know. And I think, you know, part of that, you know, was definitely put into our DNA, you know, in the mean streets of Below.
Yeah, and at that time when this is all happening, you're late 20s, 30s, and you know, you're not a kid anymore, right? You're learning about the business side of things, personal life, yeah. All that kind of stuff.
Yeah, you know, aside from being busy doing all that stuff, we were also, you know, we were how do you say it? Riding it hard and putting it away wet.
Yep.
I think they say, yeah, like we were like rocking out hard, man. We were making it happen and you know, this was one of our first tastes of, you know, really, you know, being, you know, having this kind of level of success and having, you know, the trappings that come with all that stuff. And, you know, we got trapped a few times for sure, you know, but I think that took up a lot of time. I don't know how else to put it. It took up a lot of time. And I think, you know, with that sort of being gone right now, you know, that, you know, out of my life, you know, out of general life, you know, the pace is much different, you know, than it was. You know, so I guess you don't have that mandatory repair period, you know, that you have, you know, that's necessary for you when you're riding it hard and putting it away wet.
When you guys were coming up, were there any like really big acts, bands, whatever, that you opened for that you remember like being on tour with, going to different cities and saying, hey man, I can't believe we're with this particular group or this artist?
Yeah, tons, man. Rolling Stones, we opened for a tour. We opened for Bon Jovi for a tour. We did tons. I don't know. It's hard. Bush, we opened for. I'm trying to think of some of the other ones along the way. Sheryl Crow, we did a bunch of shows with.
What's it like being on the road with some of these bands?
You know, it's a different experience every time. You know, sometimes they're really cool and it's really fun and it's, you know, and it's wild to be. It's even just wild to be around them. You know. You know, sometimes if they got something to prove, it's not quite as cool, you know, you know, and I say that about bands that open for us too, you know, bands that share the stage with us too. It's like, you know, sometimes it's amazing and the vibe is amazing. You know, we went out on the show with Train this summer, and like everybody was cool, man. The band was great. You know, the crew was great, and everybody got along. It was like we just went in, and it was like, you know, the summer was over, and everybody's like, oh man, that sucks. You know, you know, I wish you could do this another 2 months. You know, you know, other tours aren't like that quite so much. You know, because there's, you know, friction from day one, and makes it a little bit difficult.
One of the most popular, you know, I guess they say, at least in Buffalo, things that you did was the July 4th concert, 2004, Pouring Rain, middle of Niagara Square. I know there's a DVD of it. I'll go to YouTube a lot when I'm at the gym just to watch it on the treadmill to pass the time. I love watching it myself.
Cool yourself off.
Yeah, it's great. I love it, man. It's amazing. Do you remember that day? And what was that like for you guys?
Yeah, it was crazy, man. You know, that was a stressful thing to put together. I was just coming off of the first couple Music is Arts, you know, festivals. And so I knew some people at City Hall, and I sort of like, I don't know, I just sort of felt like, man, maybe we can make this happen, you know? Right. And we talked to a few people, and we got Artie Kwitchoff and Marcel Timo, you know, two of our promoter friends here involved in kind of making it happen. And we ended up having to secure that whole area, and we had to take down light poles and railings and it was just crazy. We had to move flower beds but we ended up getting a stage up and pretty awesome, man. And I do think too, I think to this day that if it didn't rain, that wouldn't have been even close to being as cool of a video.
Totally
and,
agree.
It turned out to be, you know, it was like, so it was like, by the end of it, it's just like, oh, you gotta be kidding me, man. It's like, really?
No, it's right. It's like when I'm, you know, because I'm on the sidelines for Bills game as the radio announcer, and like when you have a blizzard game or something like that, it just becomes more memorable. And especially if it turns out, like, if you win the game for you guys, it was an epic concert. It went off great. It was in the rain, and it just turned out to be amazing and something people remember for a long time.
Well, by the end of it, we were like we had all these HD cameras when HD sort of first, you know, raised its head. So they weren't very stable. So we were losing cameras left and right. Like, I think by the end we were like, you know, calling around to our friends, like relatives, and going, hey man, like, does anybody got any like VHS footage, you know, that we could edit in, you know, cause we were just losing so many cameras, you know, people were just whipping out whatever they could find, you know, to record, because it was just, you know, it was just a nightmare. But, yeah, it turned out great. You know, another cool thing about that night was at the end of the whole night, they had a little bit of a party up on top of, I forget what it's called now. It's like an Irish bar on Chippewa.
Okay.
They have a patio on the
Soho?
Roof.
Soho? About,
that could be it. It's like, okay, five stories high. It's on Franklin, actually.
Okay.
It's about five. It's where the cabaret used to be.
Yes,
whatever the place is. But we were on the roof, and there was so much water coming through the sewers that it was tearing power lines off. And there were sparks that were blowing the sewer gas up. So the sewer grates were blowing up in the air. And we were watching it happen. We're standing out on the roof watching these sewer grates fly up in the air like quarters being flipped off of somebody's thumb, man. Oh, I'll never forget that. I was up there with Mark Freeland that day watching that happen. I just remember Mark and I looking around going, oh my God, I will never forget this in my life.
That's amazing.
Yeah, that was great. And the night before, Arnie DeFranco played with Ben Folds. And some other, actually I can't remember who else played, but that was really an amazing weekend, you know, one for the books, that's for sure.
And obviously special because it was right here in Buffalo. Why have you remained here? I mean, you're a rock star. You could live anywhere in the world basically, and you could do your thing. Why have you stayed in Buffalo?
Well, I lived in LA for about 13 years. And then John and I started rebuilding the old Trackmaster to work in here. We were going to do a record there, so we went in, and rather than giving our record budget to somebody else, we spent the money to fix the place up again. So I had an apartment across the street, and I started spending some time here, and my wife started spending some more time here, and I started a little label and released a few records from some bands here, and I had the studio here, and before you knew it, I was here more than I was there, and as soon as the cats came here, you knew it was pretty much over, right? You know?
Yeah.
as soon as they became Buffalo Cats, and, you know, and I experienced the winter here, you know, I wasn't going to bring them back again. So, we ended up moving here, and I had a daughter shortly after that. And, you know, that was probably part of the idea as well.
And you mentioned a couple of times different things that you've been involved in since then. It's kind of like when you're younger and you watch an actor on screen and then you realize later on, oh, that's a director now. I mean, you have your hand in the other side of the business as well. Tell me a little bit about that and what that's been like for you.
Yeah, I have a recording studio. I've had a recording studio for the past, I don't know, many, many years. Kind of like owning a boat, you know. Some days you're like, I love this place, and some days you're like, what am I doing? This is insane. There's challenges, you know. As there are with owning any business, you know, especially today, you know, it's you know, I mean, there's challenges, but yeah, great recording studio, probably, if I do say so myself, probably the best studio in town. You know, I don't think you're going to find another place that can do the types of things we can do and have the kind of staff we have and such. Music is art. Another thing I'm involved with, which is something we started almost 20 years ago now. It'll be 19 years ago. We started kind of rumblings of a potential not-for-profit that was going to do some things for the local entertainment and music and art community. And we've been going strong now as a 501c3 now for you know, like I said, probably 18, 19 years now, which is largely due to an amazing staff and board of directors who I actually have a meeting with this evening.
All right. Well,
in a few hours here. And I also have a record label called Good Caramel Records, and we do all Japanese rock bands, actually.
And, oh, really? How did that come about?
My wife's from Tokyo, and one of the bands that I worked with from Buffalo was called the Juliet Dagger. They went over to Japan to do a tour, and we did a song with a band called Shonen Knife. We recorded a song with a band called Shonen Knife, who I have been a huge fan of. They've been around for about 30 years, longer, 35 years maybe now. After meeting them, they needed a little bit of guidance, lost the label here in the States, and that was about 11 years ago. So I've been releasing their records and some records by some other various Japanese bands over the years. So we've been doing that for a while. I spend a lot of time between here and Japan, and I enjoy spreading that culture here. I'm also involved with the Buffalo Cherry Blossom Festival, which unfortunately was canceled for this year.
Right.
We're hoping Music is Art doesn't suffer the same fate or a Goo Goo Dolls summer tour. But as we said, that's all on hold right now. So we'll see where that all ends. At this point, we're forging ahead. So.
Well, I was going to ask you too, what is next for the band? I know Miracle Pill was the last discography that was released, correct? And tell me a little bit about that, and you know, what's ahead for you guys?
Yeah, Miracle Pill was goodness, I've lost count. It might be number 13, 12, something like that. that came out in the fall last year. And we went out and toured on that a bunch, and we had a tour this summer set up, which is 45 dates across the U.S. with Lifehouse and another opener as well. And so that'll be out after that. We had a Southeast Asia tour booked. Unfortunately, that was canceled due to the coronavirus stuff. Right. So everybody in our business is holding their fingers as tightly together as they can, crossed. And we're hoping that, this whole thing comes together the way, in a way that makes people feel comfortable enough to get together in large groups again. I mean, I guess that's the key there, so.
Yeah. And, when we started this, you and I were talking just a little bit about, how we've had to kind of adjust and do things from home. I'm talking from home. I go on the radio from home. You've been doing things from home. I saw your special last weekend for Kaleida Health. You did that from home. You were trying to help promote, cleanliness, washing hands, things like that. It was pretty cool. I watched that.
Funny, right?
Yeah, it was pretty cool. It's a great way to present it. People come for the music and stay for the show, right? I mean, that's the way it is. So just give us a little idea of, what you're trying to do to help promote and, do the right thing for people here so that they can, we can all get back to normal at some point.
Yeah. My friend Paul Cambria, is involved with Kaleida and he reached out to me and asked if I'd be into doing something like a stream, to help benefit them. And I said, sure. And I had never really done anything like that before. So I wanted to make it a little, more than just playing a few songs. So I put together some PSAs of sorts, which did my best to make entertaining, and Channel 2 actually ended up picking it up, and they ran it on Saturday night, I guess. Right. So Kaleida ended up making a few thousand bucks at least. But the idea is that people understand how important it is right now to make sure that these people who are taking care of this situation have the things they need to take care of it. Man, I don't know how else to put it.
It's right, like, sure.
Like that seems pretty simple, these people are running into a burning building. I'm not going to do that. It's like firemen. It's like, policemen, it's like, that's, I even chose to do that in my life because I don't have that fiber in me. I don't think to do it. These people do somehow, and they should at the very least, aside from getting an award, of some sort, and being taken care of, at least getting their health taken care of, for God's sakes, they should be recognized for this, and they should have the things that they need, to make sure that they can do their jobs for sure. So, but anyway, off my soapbox here, I just feel like, if I can sing a few songs and goof around for a little while from my back room here, that's the least I could do to help out. So I did it, and it was a lot of fun, and fans seem to enjoy it, and so I might do it again.
It's cool. Robbie Tekak of the Goo Goo Dolls. Let's end on a couple of positive notes and fun questions for you, if I may. How many guitars do you go through in a typical concert?
We play in a lot of different tunings. So I have about five tunings, and I have a backup for each one of those. So I probably have about 10 guitars in every show.
That's awesome. What would be your advice to, now I have a 6-year-old son who, he's got his little tiny drum set, and I'm a drummer, my brother's a drummer, but he said to me before this coronavirus thing that he wanted to start learning to play the guitar. So I reached out to a couple of people, and we were about to get the lessons going, but that didn't work out because of the situation. But what would be your advice to him or anybody out there who says, I want to be a rock star someday?
Twofold. One, regarding the lessons. I'm homeschooling with my daughter now, of course, as people are. My daughter's 8. The thing that has blown my mind the most is how she adapts to e-technologies.
Okay.
Like watching something on an iPad. Like she just falls into it, man. Her teacher's in the iPod. She's in her iPad. She's in class, man. Yep. Like I could see it. Like her demeanor changes, man. So I wouldn't be afraid of getting them on, some Skype lessons with somebody.
Awesome. That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I wouldn't be afraid of that. As far as the rock star thing goes, I would say that the most pertinent advice I can give anyone is don't do it to be a rock star, because that's the wrong reason to do it. Do it because you love to do it. And that way, no matter what happens, you're going to win. It's like, this is a crapshoot, man. like getting a hit record, you know, it takes a lot of hard work, but like you shouldn't feel like everything you have done up to that point is a failure if it doesn't work, because it's music and that's why you're doing this,
right?
You know, for the songs, you know, you know, for the ability to express yourself that way. If you do it for that reason, then you will become successful as a byproduct.
That's great advice. That's a great answer. I think that should really go for almost anything, but you're right. You know, do it because you love music.
Yeah, I agree. Unfortunately, everybody in their life doesn't have the luxury to you know, have their survival, you know, be attached to that, you know, but, you know, if part of your survival is being creative, you know, then that's something you got to do, you know, so you're going to figure out how to work that in there.
Right.
You know, no matter what else you have to do, you know, to make that particular thing happen, you know, and, you know, that was something I kind of didn't get when I was younger, but I had this friend who passed away a few years back, Lance Diamond, and he and I used to talk all the time, and he was in a cover band, and I didn't get it. Like, I had left that, you know, I had gone on to do something else, you know, and I was like, well, why don't you go out there every night and do that? And I remember him telling me, dude, it's a blessing that I get to go out there every night and play these songs and play music, man. Like, that's a blessing, man. Like, who gets to do that, you know? And like, it's so true, you know, it's like, it's a blessing to be able to do this. And I think if you forget that, it's like, this job could be kind of a crappy job, you know, really, because you're gone from home a lot, you know, there's a lot of that stuff, but like, it's a blessing that, you know, we're allowed to express ourselves for a living. It's like pretty awesome.
Yeah. And that's great advice from another Buffalo legend, by the way, and Lance Diamond, no doubt about it.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Final question. Let's say you're bumping around, you're driving around Buffalo, wherever. Robbie Tekak, when you turn on your music, you put on your iPod, you turn on the radio, whatever. Do you listen to Google Doll songs in the car, or do you make sure you listen to something else?
That would be embarrassing, wouldn't it? You know? Rocking out to yourself, driving down the street. No, we listen to my wife and daughter and I listen pretty much exclusively to electro J-pop music. Pretty much, that's pretty much what you'll hear in our house. Yeah, and Michael Jackson as well.
Oh, but, okay. You gotta have the king of pop. Does your daughter? Yeah. What does your daughter know about like your career? And is she into it? Does she listen to your music?
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, I think she likes coming out to the shows and hanging out on the show on the side of the stage for a few songs, uh-huh. And you know, and she gets kind of bored after a while. Right. You know, I when she was real little, she would hang out the whole show for as long as she could stay awake. But now she's you know, she, there's other things going on. You know, there's food back there. There's, you know,
yeah.
You know, there's people hanging around. There's, you know, there's video games. There's TVs. You know, there's all sorts of stuff going on. But you know, she's been out on the road with just me before. You know, she sleeps in the bunk with me, and you know, she stays on the side of the stage during the shows and stuff. So she knows what we do. You know, but you know, it's so funny. You know, you always hear about that kind of stuff. You know, even like at my daughter's school, you know, when I first started there, it was, you know, when we first started there, you know, it was like, you know, there was a little bit of intrigue, sure. You know, because the parents knew I was a guy in a band and stuff. But, you know, that goes away quick, man. You know, it's amazing how quickly, you know, the sheen wears off of that kind of thing. And, you know, it's even quicker with your, you know, with your own kids.
No doubt about it. Robbie, thank you so much for doing this. You know, stay safe through this whole thing. I know you are, and I can't wait till you guys can get back on the road and we can all be doing the thing that we love to do in the environments that we enjoy doing them in and get back to normal, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean, it is nice to be here in my little back room and, you know, got blankets on the walls and stuff. It's kind of cool back here, but yeah, I need to get out there again.
Thanks for doing this today. I really appreciate it.
All right, brother.
Girl, let's get real. Some pads are just diapers with a good PR team, but not the new Kotex BioCare. That's because Kotex BioCare helps defend against odor and irritants. And it's the first and only pad with this pH proactive system that helps optimize the pad's pH. Just think of it as self-care for down there. Check out Kotex.com for more details on the all-new Kotex, completely redesigned to meet your needs. You asked, we heard.
People say, "I got you," all the time. Dads say it to their kids the first time they ride a bike. Friends say it to other friends when they buy them lunch. It's a good thing when someone's got you. It's especially good when someone's got you with important things like your health. And that's where WeShare's got you. We got you with a massive nationwide network of over 1 million doctors, which means you can likely keep your current doctor you know and trust. We got you with affordable prices that can save individuals up to $5,000 annually compared to traditional insurance, and save families even more. And we've got you with over 68,000 CVS Caremark pharmacies across the country. If you're tired of overpriced health insurance bills, come visit us at WeShareHealth.org or call 1-888-WeShare. Other smart Americans are making the switch every day. In a world filled with companies that cost you, it's nice to have one that's got you. WeShareHealth. We got you.
What you're listening to presumably doesn't suck, so neither should your sound system. Sonos lets you listen seamlessly from room to room. Same great sound, expertly tuned, astonishingly clear. It's not magic, but it's not not magic.